You are listening to KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul and streaming online at KFAI.org, Radio Without Boundaries. Stay tuned for Let's Ride.
Welcome to Let's Ride. I am Patrick Stevenson, the co-host of this adventure, and I'm here with Emily S. Emily S., my co-host. Our guest today is Greg Nice, the owner of Farmstead Bike Shop, a bike shop in South Minneapolis. That's amazing. And we have Greg here today to talk about bike camping and why it's awesome. Thanks,
yes,
Greg.
So let's get things started by hearing your bike origin story, Greg.
My bike origin story is a bit odd. I came at it sideways. I was a strange child in that I loved to run. And I had a...
I was a strange child. I like this.
It was a dark, strange child.
I was into jogging.
I was. Jogging wasn't even a thing. I'm old. So,
jogging?
This is like at the beginning of the first running craze in the 70s. My gym teacher, when I was in second grade, decided to run a marathon. And I begged him to train with him. So we made arrangements for me to run with him on Monday and Wednesday mornings before school. And we'd run in this trail set kind of behind I lived in a rural area, trail set behind the school. And so we ran, a mile and a half, 2 miles from second grade to fifth grade. We worked up to 10 miles. And I didn't realize until years later, by the way, that he was basically walking. This was not training for him. He was doing this purely for me.
That's nice.
My second grade ego thought I was actually running with Mr. Gurneski. In fact, I was running and he was hiking. But we went to trail races. We did all kinds of wonderful things, and I was super, super into it. And he kind of handed me to the junior high cross country coach like a gift and said, "Here, this guy is going to be awesome for you." And then he went away to grad school, and when I was in seventh grade, he came back. We used to run when he came back to town, and he came back and didn't run. He said, "I can't run anymore. My doctor told me I have to stop because I've worn out the cartilage in my feet." And I was stunned, and he said, "But I'm going to start riding my bike again, and I'd love to keep doing that with you if you're interested." And I said, "You're what? A bicycle? Come on, man. We're runners." And he slowly, over the course of a year, talked me into going for a ride. And I went on a 13-mile ride down to Farmington, Minnesota. And it was awful. Awful. It hurt so much. And I was so bad at it.
You know, we said love story, right?
Yes. It comes around. It comes around.
The bike love story. Actually, yes. I think you said a bike origin story, which has room for plenty of...
Not all.
Yeah.
Not all love runs smoothly.
True.
So it was, I hurt everywhere, and I wasn't feeling competent and awesome like I was when I was running. And, within a year we rode, 15 times that summer, and I bought a nicer bike. And a year later I spent every penny I had on a $600 bike from a Penn Cycle,
dearly departed,
completely freaked my parents out and joined a bike racing team, with a development coach, down in Minneapolis. And and that year completely transformed me, absolutely changed the course of my life. So that's it. It started out with mostly with pain, and then grew into a real love of the sport. And then I went through a racing phase and then got over it, and now I like to ride all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I heard you mention, too, that when customers come in, they talk about how much biking hurts them. You like to empathize with them, too, about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell parts of that story to lots of people who are trying to get into the sport. We're built to walk and run. We're not built to be an engine for a machine. And when we're on bicycles, that's what we are. And it takes some time to develop that and to get good at it and to eliminate the pain that can come with it. So yeah, we work a lot on fit and patience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good empathy.
Yeah.
And understanding. So the reason that we're here today in this moment is because coming up with your Farmstead Bike Shop, you have bike camping rides set up. Can you give us a little introduction on what those are all about?
Yes, thanks. We have we've been open for 3 years, and so this is our third season of doing this. I have to credit my co-owner and partner Brianna is the brainchild behind doing this in the way that we're doing it. So credit goes to her. We do what we call sub 24 overnight rides once a month through the summer to introduce people to the joys and challenges and wonderfulness of bike camping. And mostly, frankly, to show them that it's fairly simple. It doesn't need to be this big, overwrought, complicated thing. And you don't have to plan a two-week tour to sort of have a bicycle getaway. One night out of your norm, sleeping in the woods and, you know, getting up and cooking breakfast and coming home, you know, feels like a three-day break. It's really refreshing and transformative. So we just want to introduce people to that. A lot of people that we've introduced have gone off on, you know, 1 and 2 week tours and done much more adventuresome things. But our purpose is to introduce people to it and show them that it's simple and something that they can accomplish.
Awesome. I love that. So you mentioned that these rides are geared towards people who are maybe like interested in bike camping but don't know where to start. Can you talk a little bit about what you guys do as the host to make sure that they're accessible to newcomers?
Yes, we've done a couple of things. The first year that we did it, we tried sort of starting with a simple trip and then a slightly more complicated trip and then a slightly more complicated trip each month. That was wonderful and lots of fun, and fewer people came each month because they were a little daunted by the additional mileage or something about it, the weather in some cases, the hilliness of the course. So we didn't do that the second year, and we're not doing it this year. All of our trips this year are to the same site. We get a group site out at Carver, and from our shop, which is on 40th and Bryant, it's a 10-block ride up the Bryant Bikeway to the Greenway, and then from there, it's literally, and this is amazing because it's 30 miles away, it's trail all the way to the campsite.
Yeah. That's
awesome. Are separate from traffic and safe and sort of self-contained all the way out through the suburbs and to Carver Park. It's a really lovely way to start. It's relatively flat. It's an old railroad bed that we ride on, or actually two old railroad beds. So there's not any steep terrain. So folks are carrying heavy equipment or don't have fancy equipment. That's not a barrier. We've just tried to make it as simple and accessible as possible. And we also pace the ride such that it's not necessary to be in great shape. We sometimes will split into an A group and a B group, or we'll let the folks who feel like they want to ride faster just go ahead. But we'll stay and support the main group and make sure no one gets left behind.
What's the biggest group you've ever had for the rides?
I think the biggest group we've had is about 30. Folks.
That's awesome. Yeah, and these are like weeknights, Monday through Friday?
We go out typically on Saturday night and come back on Sunday.
Nice.
That seems to work for most folks. Our first trip of the year is always on Memorial Day weekend, and that's a two-night trip. So we leave Saturday and come back on Monday. And some people do two nights and some people do one. So that's a kickoff trip every year.
So if you were going to share one tip for a new rider who doesn't necessarily have access to your rides but wants to give this a try, what would that tip be?
Sign up.
Yeah.
Commit. We'll take care of you. It's a great group of folks, and we've cultivated some folks who've gotten good at this. Rather than just a couple of us leading, we really have a core group of about 10 folks who can take care of people at all stages. And that includes, you know, setting up your shelter and, you know, helping with cooking and all that. If you've never been camping before, please don't let that be a barrier. It doesn't need to be.
I think something we need to counter just in life in general is that people have this all or nothing attitude with a lot of stuff. Like when I first was talking to someone about bike camping, he was like, you can just go into town in the morning and go to brunch. Right. It's not that big a deal. Like, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be this.
You can drink a mimosa. Right.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be a hardcore experience necessarily. You can make it what you need it to be.
Right. We rode, during our first season, we rode up to Crowhassan Park for the third month. We had a pretty good list of folks signed up, but ultimately we had a couple of thunderstorms rolling in on Saturday night, and there were only 9 of us who left the shop, and we got really soaked. And we stopped, and we pulled off the trail in Wayzata and kind of holed up a bit to wait for one cell to pass. And we were watching the weather on our phones, and you know, we realized we were safe. We were just going to be a little wetter and colder than we expected, and then pitch our tents in the rain. But we stopped at a small town bar, and I think we were there for almost 3 hours. I think we damn near closed the place, and ate glorious food that we didn't have to cook, and had a few beers, and then finished the last 10 miles up to the park, and everybody pitched their tents, and we made a big fire and dried out, and it was a wonderful day the next day. But that was one of the things we learned from that was we lost people trying that. So that was when we started to simplify and just say, oh, you know, keep it simple and, mm-hmm. and keep it accessible and encourage people to, you know, go to Crowhassan on their own, and teach them how, and give them the route, and give them the confidence to do that. So
that's awesome. Are you guys documenting the routes that you're taking and like posting them on a website so that other people could replicate them on their own?
I think we haven't done that in any formal way. We've certainly sent the route to folks and done a description of it. It's an unbelievably well-known resource to a lot of the community, and it's so simple to do that that it's, you know, it's hard to make a mistake. There's one tricky spot in Hopkins where you get off of one trail and go through this glorious Copenhagen-esque separate bike lane through downtown Hopkins. God bless Hopkins. Oh my God,
8th Avenue. That's the 8th Avenue Trail, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you told me beautiful. 10 years ago that would happen in Hopkins, I would have laughed for an hour and a half. And I absolutely love it. I'm giddy when I ride on it. It's amazing. It looks like Europe. And then you get on another trail just north of Main Street, and then you're pretty much on that trail all the way through to the park. So
that's that Lake Minnetonka LRT. That's also correct. A good one. Yep. Limestone.
Yeah,
great.
Crushed limestone out of Hopkins and... Mm-hmm. Really wonderful ride. It's beautiful. You disappear out of Hopkins. You disappear kind of you're along Highway 7 for a couple of miles, and you just disappear into the woods. And you're actually riding through suburban subdivisions, but you don't really see them. It's just wooded, calm, quiet loveliness.
I love it.
Yeah.
And you
I
duck under ride. 101 in a tunnel, and then you're in the woods again, and then you pop out at the lake and skirt the lake all the way around through Excelsior, and then peel off into the woods again, and then you're at the park. It's really a beautiful trip.
Dairy Queen along the way. Well-placed Dairy Queen.
Yes.
I feel like creating some sort of reference guide for other people would be the coolest thing ever. When I first moved to Minneapolis, having not ever lived here before, one of the things that I really wanted to figure out was where could I go do those one night, two night bike camping trips, and what are the tips that you need to know? Where is the Dairy Queen, and where's the dive bar or the motel you can stay in if there's a thunderstorm? And then
we need an encyclopedia or something.
There was some social media post that I like saved. I think I like took screenshots of it maybe, but it was someone on like a Twin Cities bike group that had asked that question, and people had so much information to share, and it was this wealth of knowledge that I screenshotted and saved to my desktop.
That's a word.
It'll be there when you need it.
Yes.
Yeah. So we should nice segue into your list that you brought to us here, Greg.
Sure.
So Greg has a bike camping checklist.
Oh yes.
So we just posted this mostly as a conversation starter. We meant it to be slightly incomplete because we wanted people to feel free to add things. But it simply lists sleeping bag, sleeping pad, camp hammock or small tent, camp pillow or stuff sack, cooking equipment, stove, fuel, cookware, utensils, plate, cup, coffee cone, food, coffee, beverages, camp chair, that's optional, headlamp or flashlight, your bike headlight works really well too in many cases, pocket knife, waterproof matches, toiletries, bike clothes and bike shoes, off the bike clothes, jeans, shorts, t-shirt, sweatshirt, socks, sandals, bathing suit, maybe rain gear, maybe cold weather gear, a towel, and a good book. I want to say right away, one of the things about a sub 24 overnight is that you can be pretty darn sure what the weather's going to be like and either not go or know that you're going to need rain gear. I have done lots of trips like this where I've looked at the weather and just sort of hedged my bets and traveled with just a hammock, no rain fly, no rain gear, really very little cold weather gear. You know, in July, you can get away with traveling really light if it doesn't look like it's going to rain. So a lot of these things can be sort of game time decisions. But so we had people add tick repellent, insect repellent.
That's going to be more relevant with climate change. The ticks are coming.
Right. It is tick season. It's no joke.
It's true.
Thank you for the PSA.
PSA.
A few other things.
Wear
yes.
your tick spray.
Wear your tick spray. Check for ticks.
Yeah.
What would be an unexpected item that you bring on a bike camping trip? Or Patrick, if you have an unexpected item that you maybe have brought on a bike camping trip?
I, having said that I travel light, when I do these trips, I take our Surly Big Dummy cargo bike loaded front and rear with all kinds of things that I use for the group. And I carry about 6 pounds of cheese and
I'm going
a bunch of avocados
day.
And a bunch of tomatoes and 3 loaves of sourdough bread and a bunch of butter in a cooler and a cast iron skillet.
Nice.
Because I make custom grilled cheese sandwiches for lunch before we head home every time. So when I pull the skillet out of my pan here, a lot of people are like, "Oh, you really are insane." And I just cackle.
It's good weight training.
I have one too.
What's yours?
So that I've told this story a million times. But the very first time I went bike camping was with a friend, a friend's couple. It was a double date.
They're a couple?
A pair of couples? No, one couple. And we went bike camping together and our route was very ambitious. It was like 30 miles, like 2/3 of which was uphill. Mm. And we basically, had a load like we were car camping. So we were carrying steaks and beer, so much cold beer. And then we got there, and my friend like seasoned the steaks, and the PBR that we had was still cold, and we put the steaks on the fire and ate those steaks and drank the it was the most delicious meal I've ever had after riding uphill for like 30 miles.
Everything tastes better after a day like that. It's,
yeah.
That's one of the glories of bike camping is eating is just so joyful.
Yeah, bring steak.
Absolutely.
That's my unique item.
We stop in Excelsior on each trip out for 45 minutes on the way out so that people can go to the last possible grocery store.
Oh, nice.
And buy things like steak so they can cook steak and not haul it and have to keep it cold for, you know, 3.5 or 4 hours. Excelsior Brewing's there. There's a lovely liquor store there. There's a great coffee shop there. You can grab what you need there. So we always stop and make that part fairly simple. So a lot of people have a fairly empty cooler until Excelsior, and then they load it up, and they're only carrying that stuff for 6 or 7 miles.
We are so lucky. Look,
it's crazy how lucky we are.
Yeah.
I was describing this trip to someone in Portland. I was out at a bike conference in the spring, and these are Portlanders. I think I've said enough.
yeah,
I was describing
this
trip.
From Minneapolis.
And they were, And they're like, so you lead a trip and like with a bunch of newbies, and they get to just ride almost to the campsite and then buy all their stuff and then just, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how it works. Just where the trail goes, and we've just figured out how to make it easy.
That's awesome.
Just their eyes like roll into their head, like. Last time I went bike camping, I, you know, strapped two coolers to my cargo bike and, you know.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Geared down and rode 8 miles an hour uphill.
Do you think you could order a pizza to be delivered?
It is possible to order a pizza delivered to the campsite. It's been done. Some people do ride into Victoria. There are 4 or 5 great places to eat there.
Brunch. Town in the morning. Yep. There's all kinds of spots. There's a brewery there, too, the Enki Brewing.
Enki Brewing is there.
Yeah, yep. The one bummer with that is that they used to have a really nice grocery store, but then it closed.
They closed the grocery store. It's true. Our very first trip was about a week after they closed, actually. And so half of our group, once we got settled, I led them into town with the cargo bike. I was like, we'll go shopping and come back. We got into town and we closed grocery store.
Oh, no.
So there's a holiday, which was not helpful.
Not quite the same.
So two of us just rode back to Excelsior and with a list and shopped, and we were back in an hour, and it was all fine. But
you just make it work.
Yeah. Now we stop in Excelsior.
Yeah. So we're making it work here today on Let's Ride. We're going to take a little bit of a break. I'm going to go drink some Monster.
Patrick, don't do that.
I'll think about it. We'll see you in a minute.
You are listening to Let's Ride on KFAI 90.3 FM in the Twin Cities and streaming online at kfai.org.
Welcome back to Let's Ride. I'm here with my co-host Patrick. I'm Emily, and we are joined today by Greg Nice, co-owner of Farmstead Bike Shop in South Minneapolis.
Hi.
What's up, Greg?
I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Let's talk bike shops. How did Farmstead Bike Shop come to life, and what's the story there?
Great question. I from a teenager, grew up racing and riding and doing all kinds of craziness on bikes, and then coached for a few years when I was done racing, and became a commuter and a utility rider, I sort of had to kind of go through my own little rehab program to not be training all the time, and I literally took my racing bike apart and put it in two separate addresses so that I couldn't put it together and go ride it, because when I got on it, I was a jerk. I was like compulsive training, like no one wanted to be around me.
It's amazing you could see that in yourself.
Oh, I definitely saw it in myself, and I wanted to stop. And so so I did that. It took me 3 years before I could put that bike together and actually go enjoy myself again. But it was totally worth doing. And so during that time, I was studying and working in the healthcare field and sort of building a career there that took a lovely U-turn when I was just traveling more than I wanted to be. Kind of came back and refocused my work life more locally. And as a part of that, started managing a local bike shop. And I thought, well, I had a couple of projects and goals for that shop that I was very focused on. And I thought a couple of years of this will be fun, and then those goals will be met, and I'll move on. And I had so much fun, and I enjoyed myself so much that I stayed. And I ran another shop over in St. Paul for a year, and during that year, really decided that if I had the opportunity, I would start my own shop, and I kind of had a vision for it. That shop shut down fairly abruptly. Their lease was up, and the family that owned it just simply decided it was time for them to be done with it. And so it was a very sudden onset. So the service manager there, who had become a good friend of mine, and I went to lunch, sort of processed the shock of that shop closing. And I said, Scott, I have a business plan, and it's December. Do you think we can get a shop started by spring? We don't have a building or anything. And we looked at each other and said, yeah, we could do that. Bree was already 100% on board. We were already looking. Bree and I and a friend of ours, John Lewis, were at the very same time starting a nonprofit listening room venue and music resource called the Warming House. So we'd created the 501c3 structure, and we were looking for space for that venue when I got the news that the St. Paul shop closed, and I we met once a week to talk about that, and I came to the next meeting and said, I need to focus on something else right now, so I'm going to have to back away from the Warming House project a bit till I get this figured out. I really need to put my head down and get a shop started, like, right now. And within a week, a space became available that we were familiar with across the street from our house, on two bikeways that would house perfectly both businesses.
Meant to be.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
For those of you who can't see us, Patrick and I are both jaws dropped. That's our amazing.
Jaws, our jaws dropped about 100 times that week. And so we quickly committed to that, and we did the build out for the venue and the shop, and we were off and running. We did all our own build out, and it's just a really wonderful process, and with a lot of community support and a lot of just a lot of good hard work help too. We had a few friends come in and help us, you know, do some heavy building, and it was a pretty wonderful experience, and humbling as well. We were certainly behind the eight ball for the first season, but by year two, we were running really well, and this is our third spring, and it really feels like we're firing on all cylinders right now, and we're having a really good time, and feels like I'm where I'm supposed to be. So
that's awesome.
Long story, but that's how that happened. Again, somewhat accidentally.
Yeah. And it started with a little pain too.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Most of my successes have started with some sort of pain. So,
so you, I've been to your shop a couple of times, and it is lovely. But one of the things that I think makes it really unique is what's in the basement. And you kind of mentioned it briefly, but can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. The Warming House is really lovely. We're very lucky to share the space with them. And I'm involved in that organization as well as a founder and as a board member. I attend the weekly business meeting with Bree and John and bring my perspective. Brianna Lane and John Lewis really do the bulk of the lion's share of the work making that place happen. And it's amazing. We do 150 ticketed music presentations every year. That's three a week. So we bring in musicians from the local scene, from regional and national touring artists as well. We have a 49-seat, dead quiet, super music-focused listening room space that's just incredible. And so for musicians who have a, you know, can command a 200-seat room in Boston but don't have an audience here, those folks can come here. We can grow their audience over a couple of years. And when we do our job well, they're either at the Hook and Ladder or at the Cedar 2 years later with a big enough audience to make those larger spaces make sense. And they're sort of off and running. It's really, really gratifying to see musicians, you know, fill in the Turf Club or pull in a show at the Cedar, who, you know, came to us with, you know, 10 people at their first show, and profoundly talented people who just didn't have a local audience.
Yeah.
So a big part of our job and the reason we started the place is to create space for those folks and to bring that kind of talent to this town. It's a rock and roll town. There's lots of bar gigs, but if you're trying to listen to somebody's technical acoustic playing and listen to the words that they're their writing and singing. It's hard to do that here, so those spaces are rare.
Yeah. Is there much synergy between the bike shop and the warming house?
Well, there is. We have a lot of people who are involved in both. For example, one of my favorite local commuter customers sort of asked what was going on one Saturday during the bluegrass jam that happens from 10 to noon on Saturdays. We have a built-in soundtrack at the shop on Saturday mornings, live folk music, fiddle tunes coming up from the basement. It's really lovely. He literally said, where's that music coming from? He thought it was, you know, Pandora or Spotify. And I said, it's downstairs. You can go down and take a look if you want. And his eyes lit up. And I didn't know he was a musician, but now he comes every Saturday, now with his kid, and sometimes when she's in town with his mother, and they all bring their instruments and,
awesome.
And join the jam. So
amazing.
That's a ton of fun. So there's a lot of
synergy.
And
the musicians are like, what's upstairs? Maybe I would like to bike to a show someday.
Yeah.
Do any musicians bike to the show, their shows?
Well, it's always been tied up for us. Since I've known Brianna, she has toured with a dear friend of ours named Peter Mulvey, who's a Milwaukee-based musician. He's now in Northampton, Massachusetts, but he's a Milwaukee kid. And those two have done a music tour by bicycle from a week to 2 weeks long, sometimes a bit longer, usually looping around the Midwest. But they did one trip from here to Boston. And they're playing shows every night, and we're carrying all the gear, and it's a self-supported thing. And so the idea of, you know, once you've done that, I've ridden with them for 10 years, and I'm the Sherpa, and, you know, if we're running late and there's a headwind, you know, that's my problem. And we get them there on time, and then I get to sit down, and they have to get up and play a show. So I feel like I get the better end of that deal every time. But the idea of riding to a show at the 318 or at the Astor or at the 331 Club or really anywhere in town, mm-hmm. is not daunting at all. Brie and I ride to all of our local shows unless it's extremely cold out. So, yeah, bikes and music have always been tangled up in our world, so this makes perfect sense to us.
It's so funny. So last week we talked to Cato from Twin Cities Adaptive Cycling, and she has built a life with her partner, too, out of, like, the shared interests,
mm-hmm.
right? Like,
yeah.
It occupational therapy
yeah.
plus biking, and you are music plus biking. Mm-hmm. And it's like people have found a way to fuse these two things or these two loves into passions that really make sense for them. It's
maybe
awesome.
This should be like a love
yeah.
podcast.
What fits with bikes?
Well, absolutely. Cato and Tommy are amazing, and we've been lucky enough to get to work with them as they've built that organization, too. I've nothing but respect for what they're doing. It's amazing work. But yeah, I mean, if we wanted to get into the pros and cons of running two businesses with your spouse, we could do that. I think that would be useful for a lot of people and probably stop a few people from trying it.
Writing down another podcast.
Not just
idea.
One, two businesses.
That's right. Brie always
says
it's like,
Emily and Patrick take on relationship/business therapy.
Yeah, that's right.
Brie always says it's like having twins.
I love that.
Yeah, it's we've learned a lot about each other, and we're definitely stronger for it. But there have been some rough days, if we're honest, and that's real life.
Yeah,
for sure.
So if you're back to your bike shop, if it had a personality, what would it be?
Wow. personality. Well, I think one of the questions we get asked most is why Farmstead?
Yeah, why Farmstead?
Good question.
And we had before we landed at our location, we had a couple of agricultural names in mind, sort of farmish names in mind. Brie grew up in Minneapolis, but went to Warren Wilson College in North Carolina, which is a farm school. Part of your job there is to, you know, raise the animals and the crops that they use to run the food service. And so her work study one year was, you know, taking care of the pigs, and another year it was gardening. And she fell in love with that, and has a passion for that. in my work in rural health and in some of my family relationships, I have farmers and ranchers, and I've gotten tangled up in those worlds, and I'm fascinated with it. And I'm a big fan of Wendell Berry as a poet, sort of conservationist. So that's all kind of spinning in my head all the time. And we ended up across the street from Lindale Farmstead Park. So Farmstead just sort of dropped
another synchronicity in this
right
story,
into place, certainly. But so people ask me that, and I'm like, well, if you're from the neighborhood, you may not know that the park right across the street mm-hmm. is called Farmstead Park, and most people didn't know that. They just know it as the park with the sledding hill, or
okay,
maybe
talk about that.
Maybe Lindale Park.
Yeah,
but we do. I think we do work really hard to sort of keep that ethic in mind that we're always cultivating the goodness in the cycling community and trying to help people you know realize their potential. So many people walk into the shop every day saying things like, you know, my neighbor has been commuting because I watch her walk out with her briefcase every morning, and sometimes even when it's snowing, oh my God, and she rides to work, and I've been watching her for 2 years. How do I do that? That's my favorite thing in the world is when somebody comes in and asks a question like that. And, you know, I ride around the lake all the time with my kids, and, you know, I used to ride more when I was in college. But so we sit down and we say, what do you need to carry? You know, can you be sweaty when you get there or not? Do you want to use the bus as a tool? And we map it. And sometimes I actually ride the course with someone the first couple times so they can time it. We'll go out on a Friday night and just ride that course, or a Saturday morning, whatever works, and sort of make that happen. And so you've got a customer who's doing that, who 2 years later comes camping with you, and a year later joins the team and goes and rides the Almanzo or Riot Gravel or something like that. That's, for me, what makes it worthwhile.
Dude,
cool. Is watching people just continue to challenge themselves with a little support from us and maybe a nudge here and there, and really just take off as cyclists. One of my favorite stories about the shop is we had a commuter customer who's an architect. He works downtown. He has a couple of kids and lived in Amsterdam for a couple of years and has that whole bike ethic of, you know, using your bike to get around. They have a couple of cargo bikes and they ride their bikes everywhere. And he walked into the shop and told me he wanted to get into track racing, or that he was going to get into track racing. And I didn't know him very well at the time, but he has systematically worked himself up through the ranks, and he will absolutely become a Category 1 racer
wow.
this year before
cool.
the Velodrome closes. Mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You know, we sit and talk watts in February and talk about his training program and you know, mash numbers and nobody sees those conversations, but it's, you know, when I get to go see him race on Thursday nights in our kit, it's really, really gratifying. Because
cool.
He was, you know, just a typical dad commuter rider, and he's just turned his world around to make this happen. And that's a ton of fun.
I never
I
thought of
that.
It that way with the Farmstead, like that you're nurturing people and helping
yeah.
them grow like a crop. Oh my God.
They're
I
like
never
the,
made that connection before.
You guys are like the cool urban hippie organic farmers who are like tending to the soil that is growing the bike community.
Yeah.
I love that.
Also, we should mention this.
I'll go with that.
But this is very important to me. Okay, so I'll say one thing I should mention as a responsible quote-unquote journalist is that Farmstead sponsors 30 Days of Biking and the Joyful Riders Club, which are things I organize. But
we love that.
We would have Greg on the show no matter what, sponsorship or not. But right outside the shop is a sweet sledding hill, and you guys have snow tubes that people can take down the hill, and it's awesome.
It's true.
So awesome.
We bought 12 resort-style, like top-of-the-line.
Legit.
Resort-style snow tubes from a huge company in Ontario, and we lose money with them every year, but we meet all the neighbors, and we do two-for-one specials on snow days and feed the kids hot chocolate, and it's a blast.
It's so much
yes.
fun.
Yes, come and sled. If we trust you and you're a grown-up, we'll let you keep them overnight so you can do your, you know, your midnight sledding as well. So it's not just during business hours.
Midnight sledding is the bomb.
It is. Highly recommended.
So let's give some calls to action here. So when is the... So unfortunately, this is going to air or come out after your next most upcoming mm-hmm. camping trip. So when is mm-hmm. the next one after that?
Camping trips of this season, 2019, are the last weekend of the month in May, June, and July. Usually we have an August one. We don't have one scheduled this year because there's a family wedding that we need to deal with. But we may add a September trip. So I think once this is out, last weekend of June and last weekend of July, from Saturday to Sunday.
And people can just find your Facebook page and find all the Facebook events and all that stuff?
Yep, we have lots of information on Facebook and Instagram. If you're interested, you can call the shop or just email. But to reserve a spot, all you need to do is email us at the shop. So either info@farmsteadbikeshop.com or greg@farmsteadbikeshop.com.
And it's
just
free.
Say, hey, we want to come camping. It
cool.
is free. Yes.
How is it free?
Well, it's the only expense that we're supporting is the group site. So we make those reservations in February when you can still get them, and then pass that on. So folks bring their own everything else, basically. So,
and then for our listeners who maybe can't just hop on one of your awesome overnight bike camping trips, what are some things that maybe they could think about if they wanted to start their own sub 24 hour bike camping trips in their communities?
Great question. We have routes and details to share from the Twin Cities Metro to Carver, to Crowhassan, to William O'Brien, to Interstate State Park, to Willow River State Park in Wisconsin, and to Nerstrand State Park, which is between Northfield and Faribault. We have detailed routes for all of those, and those are all accessible. Nerstrand is 65 miles from
holy,
the shop, so that's
holy Moses.
That's a bit of a commitment. You'd want to leave early, and
you can do it though.
So if you're from elsewhere, find the parks in your area. Find one that's 20 to 25 miles away. Use Google Maps to route the bike friendliest mm-hmm. route and go do it.
Even if it's
really simple.
Away, it's
2 miles is
it.
Fine. Yeah, just get out of your normal routine and get on your bicycle and transport yourself to somewhere else and camp and then come home. That's all it is.
Kick back awesome. And have some drinks.
Yeah. You don't have to go fast. You don't have to carry a whole bunch of stuff. You can bring a tent and grab food at a restaurant and grab breakfast at a restaurant and not cook at all if you want. But yeah, just get out and do it.
Just have what's on your back. That's all you need is what's on your back right there.
Exactly.
kick it. Well, thanks for coming on the show today, Greg.
Thank you.
It's been awesome.
It's been a ton of fun. Thanks.
Fist pound. Celebratory fist pound.
Do we want to talk?
Boom.
So what's the next bike camping trip you're going on? Maybe not related to your shop.
Yeah, our personal bike camping trip.
Yeah, should we do a...
Yeah, let's do a round robin.
Yeah. You want to
first,
Emily? Start?
Oh, I get to start. I am going on a bike camping trip with some of my closest girlfriends. It's a ladies' trip up in near on the North Shore. We're doing bikepacking.com calls it the North Shore Straddle and Paddle, and it's a 5-day bikepacking trip with 1 day out in the Boundary Waters on a canoe.
Sweet.
That sounds amazing. I don't qualify to join you in any specific way.
I like Straddle and Paddle is the name. That's
I know. I'm so excited.
I can't wait
Thank
to
you,
hear
Thank you, bikepacking.com, for having routes available.
Yeah, look at that. That's a great resource for anybody.
What's your next?
Yeah, what's yours?
I am hoping to pull this off with a few folks this year. We came up with the idea last year on the music tour. But I'm hoping to get on the Empire Builder and go to La Crosse, visit a couple friends, ride up to Trempealeau, and camp at Perot State Park, and probably have a walnut burger at the Trempealeau Hotel, and then
nice.
Get up and go to Ecker's Apple Orchard for their music and beer and apple festival weekend, and then ride to Winona that evening and get on the train and come home.
That sounds amazing.
That's a plan.
We so should swap here. Bike packing yeah. itinerary.
Like I yep. see, I see a common thread in all this is like go biking, then consume delicious things.
Yes,
mm-hmm. cheese, beer, steak, walnut burgers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it. I think my next bike camping trip is gonna be yours. A Memorial Day.
Fantastic.
My baby and wife are leaving town, and I'm like, well, yes. why not just go for a bike camping trip?
Wow, you saved oh, so that like for this... now to tell me. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That makes me very happy.
Can I be I on
love
the list?
It.
You're on the list.
All right. Let's do it.
Excellent.
Thanks for coming on the show, Greg.
Yeah, thank you so much, Greg.
Yeah, thank you both very much.
Thanks for listening. I'm Emily. My co-host is Patrick. Our producer is Luke, and our studio is KFAI. And a huge thank you to Greg Nice, co-owner of Farmstead Bike Shop in South Minneapolis. And Greg, I'm going to turn it over to you to leave us with one quote about your shop.
Thank you. If you're thinking about bike camping with us, here's something you should know. The bicycle is an unprecedented merger of a toy, a utilitarian vehicle, and sporting equipment. The bicycle can be used in so many ways and approaches perfection in each use. For instance, the bicycle is the most efficient machine ever created. Converting calories into gas, a bicycle gets the equivalent of 3,000 miles per gallon. A person pedaling a bicycle uses energy more efficiently than a gazelle or an eagle. And a triangle-framed bicycle can easily carry 10 times its own weight, a capacity no automobile or airplane can match. That's Bill Strickland. Come camping with us.